Welcome back to Tri Chatter. Ron Sattermo here. We are very fortunate to have with us an outstanding triathlete today, Slater Fletcher. I don't know too much about him other than he's an animal in the triathlon world. He cycles with some of my other triathlon buddies, but just an amazing triathlete. So say hello to everybody, Slater.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in.
And let's get the pitches out of the way. You've got some sponsors that kind of help you out. And tell us who sponsors you.
Yeah, Vitargo Generate is my sole source of electrolyte or carbohydrates. It's a fuel I use for everything from training to recovery. And I can mix it with anything from electrolytes, protein for recovery. But that's pretty much been my sole source of fuel since I started training and going long for about a year now, which is when my training really switched as well. There's pretty good correlation to when I started training more and started using Vitargo, and continues to be kind of my secret sauce, but the fuel for me. So that along with Ellsworth bikes, from mountain biking to the triathlon road bike training, it's the weapon of choice for me. I think I feel the strongest on the bike and always able to run pretty efficiently off it, and I think a lot of that has to do with the bikes I'm on. So
awesome. Well, let's approach this in sort of chronological order. Mm-hmm. Because you're fairly new to triathlon, but where did you come from? What sports did you participate in when you were a kid?
I swam in high school my freshman sophomore year, and just kind of got burnt out, I guess. Didn't really have a lot of motivation. My older brother swam, so I was in swimming, and I think somewhere around my sophomore year, I just didn't do anything. Or my junior year, and I wrestled my senior year just for a little bit, and just went into surfing and snowboarding after high school and college, and pretty much got into the workforce and just started putting away the food and work and gained a bunch of weight, and I went on a hiking trip with some friends from church, and we went up to Half Dome, and I thought I was gonna die hiking. I was 215 pounds and just couldn't enjoy.
You were 215 pounds? You gotta see this dude. What do you weigh now? You're probably what, 135, 140?
150s.
150s
I average.
Man, that's hard to believe.
Yeah. It was just working, and you know, I was traveling a lot, so everything went on the Amex for food and I didn't have to question it, and I grew up camping a lot, when I was younger, and it kind of hit me. I couldn't even appreciate the outdoors, hiking, and that just kind of started a cycle of me just wanting to get outside more and kind of enjoy life, not just be stuck working. And that led to a lot of hiking with my wife, which is who I train with most of the time. And I did a little motorcycle riding when I was younger and dirt bike riding stuff, and kind of want to get back on a mountain bike. I used my friend's mountain bike a couple times, and just found I really, really like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even out of shape, I got a bike and kind of had an interest to do something that was multi-sport, which I didn't know at the time, but I just couldn't see myself sticking in one sport. And I remember watching like the Eco Challenge adventure race stuff, and that always kind of caught my interest. But the only thing I could find reasonably close and look like I could possibly do was an Xterra. So I did the one in Snow Valley, having no idea. You know, I was riding my bike up and down the river trail on mountain bike for 10 miles and thought I could do 10 miles mountain bike, but it's a world of difference.
Yeah, the river trails and an Xterra is a little, yeah, little bit different. So what year was that?
That was 2006, and after, that was a pretty big shock. It was also at 7,000 feet, so first time really swimming since high school, and But as hard as it was, it got me hooked.
I guess. So wait a minute. 2006, it's been, what, 3.5, 4 years that you...
Yeah.
Really, since your first Xterra.
Yeah. And it took me a while to actually get back in Xterra. I did some road triathlons, and then my wife and I just kind of would start doing races and whatever on the weekend, from trail running to just about everything. Never really stuck to one thing, I guess. And I think it was a while before I started doing the Xterra. Like, I think I skipped a year of doing any of them. And then last year, I did the series around the U.S. trying to go to Nationals. I went to Nationals, ended up going to Worlds in Maui. And my wife did too. And she did an awesome job out there. I actually crashed on the bike course.
Uh-oh.
And got pulled off the course, so I didn't get to finish. So that was kind of my motivation at the beginning of this year, was just to go back to Maui to finish. And then to do my first Ironman this year. So that was kind of my goals going into this year.
Wow. Well, you skipped over a lot of stuff that I want to kind of talk about. Okay. So did you grow up here in California?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Huntington Beach area. Kind of moved all around, but been in Orange County pretty much my whole life.
Okay. So. And when did you meet your wife?
Oh, we've been married for over 70 years.
I got to be careful asking these kind of questions. Us guys don't tend to keep track of the calendar quite as well as our significant others do.
Yeah, we've been married over 7 years, and we were dating for 5 years before that, so quite a while. We met at Snow Valley.
Okay, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And she, what's her athletic background?
Good question. Snowboarding? I don't know. She didn't really do anything in high school, just a lot of hiking, and you know, she's always been active, but I don't think she's ever done, she didn't play sports in high school. And I met her snowboarding, and that's kind of what we did in the beginning. And
okay.
I mean, she's always kind of ridden bikes and stuff, but never anything really structured. So
yeah, it's just amazing that, you know, you guys came from, you know, literally not doing much at all and being overweight and out of shape to where you're at now. I mean, it's got to be some incredible genetics there, and work ethic, obviously, because even though the genetics are good, the work has to come as well.
Yeah, I think that's the fun part. It doesn't feel like work, which is a good thing.
And you got a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you do?
Yeah, I'm my title is solution architect, but I'm a network engineer. I basically meet with customers to design networks or how to improve their power and cooling and data centers and nerd stuff.
Okay.
But it's allowed me to have flexibility, especially in the last year or two, as maybe luck, I guess, but as my training tends to go up, my work becomes more flexible, or maybe I make it, but it's allowed me. I used to do a lot of installs, so I mean, that in one way, looking back, was almost like mental training, because we'd have to do, you know, internet cutovers where we'd have to work through the night or however long it took for the teamwork to get something done. And but now, thankfully, I'm just going to meetings, doing the designs, and sending stuff back, so it's a lot easier to schedule, a lot more time.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're talking about, you know, training for Ironman, it's you know, especially if you want to place well, it's it's a part-time job.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely takes a lot of time.
So okay, so that's your roots in Xterra. You borrowed a mountain bike from a friend and and took that first one on. And how did you do in the first one?
Oh, I don't even know.
You finished.
I finished. I think I was ninth in my age group, but there may have been 10 people in my age group. I was happy to finish.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about my first triathlon as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done the Xterra thing. But, that's pretty good. So, okay, from there, you started to mix it up? You started doing some road stuff and Xterra?
Yeah, I did. I think that was at the end of the year, and triathlon was... the races were kind of winding down. But I was pretty excited. So I tried to do as many triathlons at the end of that year as I could. And then I think it rolled over to like running, and we have some friends in Big Bear that put on races kind of all year. They're adventure races to snowshoeing, paddling, all kinds of stuff. So we got into some paddling. We did a lot of adventure races together, getting completely lost. And that was a test of our marriage. It's tough being out there not knowing where you're going. And I mean, looking back, training wise, that was probably some of the best base training we did.
Yeah.
We'd be out there all day on our feet and just real low intensity. But like you said, there's a lot of work, but it never seemed like work. That was still some of the funnest times out there with friends, just kind of in the woods. So we did that for a couple years until I think this last year was the first year I really just did swim, bike, run type stuff.
Yeah.
Before that, I was still paddling a lot and kind of doing a lot of mountain biking. Even this year, I mountain biked the least. In fact, there was twice this year I went like 4 weeks without riding my mountain bike, which is a big deal for me.
Mm.
It was having withdrawals.
Interesting. So I printed out, for those of you that are not aware of this, you got to go to this website. It's called Athlinks, athlinks.com. So I pulled up Slater's races here. Now I'm going to embarrass him a little bit, because he's got races on this thing going back to 2007. Let's see, TBF Xterra Real MTB, whatever that stands for, triathlon. That was April 2007. Is that the one you're talking about?
I think that was...
Maybe it was before that, your first one, right?
Yeah.
06. Yeah, they don't have that one on here. But going back, you know, I'm looking here in 07, and they've got this in columns. It's got your place in your age group, and then your place, like, overall. And I see, you know, fourth, second, fifth, second, third, fourth, first, second, first. So you're obviously an awesome athlete. I mean, you know, you can pull mine up, and mine's a lot longer than yours, but I don't have that many first, seconds, and thirds. It's just incredible. And you know, some of these races, it's weird that we're in different age groups, so I don't really keep very close track of people that are, you know, younger than me. Mm-hmm. I do keep track of some that are just younger and just older than me, but I don't keep track of the guys for the most part in your age group. But I'm looking on here, I'm seeing we've done a lot of the same races together. You know, I've been out there. I haven't been anywhere close to your times, but you know, we've been out on the course together. So, but this is very impressive stuff. I see, you know, Benelli, you took first place in October of 08. And I think I probably did that race too and finished like a half an hour behind you. And I probably took first place too, but, you know, that's just how it goes. But I guess the thing that intrigues me the most is this period. Well, actually, Xterra Championship, that was 09. You came in 10th place in that race. Was that the Nationals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in Ogden last year.
Yeah. Yeah. So you really started coming into your own then with the Xterra thing. And then where did you qualify for? Do you have to qualify for Nationals in Xterra, or can you just sign up for that?
Last year, it's kind of weird how the way Xterra does, but for the U.S. series to go to Nationals, you get points by racing local races.
Mm.
And the Worlds is actually completely separate. It doesn't use that point system. You have to qualify at one of the regional races.
Okay.
So I flew to Richmond earlier this year and did the East Coast Championship. Got second there, and that's how I qualified for Worlds. So that was my only other Xterra this year.
Okay. So. All right. So was it 2010 you finished Worlds? Was it 09 that you crashed? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, so 09 you crashed, mm-hmm. couldn't finish, and then last year, 2010, you qualified for Worlds again?
Yeah.
And was it in Maui again? Do they have it in the same place every year?
Yeah, in Maui.
Yeah, okay.
In the lava.
Yeah.
Back of Haleakala.
Yeah. I love... Maui's my favorite island. I like them all, but Maui's my favorite. So tell us about that race.
It was... it was nice to see the rest of the course. And, you know, I had been training after Xterra last November. I went to an endurance corner training camp and kind of had been doing a lot of races in 2-3 hour range. And then I just randomly had entered a couple races that were longer than that. And I did the 12 hours of Temecula bike race out in earlier that year, and just felt really, really good after 4 or 5, 6 hours. Just started feeling better and better. And I never really trained long or raced long, but I just felt the longer it went, the better I felt. And I was looking at some results, and I seemed to do better at longer races. So last November, I kind of got the itch to do an Ironman and went to the camp to see if, if I liked the training and if I could do the distance. And I think it was more at the time that my wife Monique and I had been racing so much that I knew if I was going to do an Ironman, I'd probably have to put off a lot of the 2 or 3 hour races for months, just prepping for a single race. And I didn't know if I'd really like that. I just like to go out and race and not really have the pressure of one race. Make a long story short, I went to the camp, found out I really liked it, and kind of just set my sights on doing my first Ironman. And then the entire year, this year, had actually since last November, had just been focused on Ironman training. So going into Xterra Worlds this year, it was a unique experience in the fact that everything I'd done had been Ironman training,
mm-hmm.
low heart rate. It was pretty rare for me to even get my heart rate into the 160s. And I kind of came to the conclusion that was 2 weeks after Kona, and I realized I had the fitness. It was going to be a 3 hour race, and I started realizing it was kind of all mental at that point, which scared me. I'd been doing longer and longer races, but this is a race I knew physically I could do. It's just how fast I could go, and how much suffering I could take, and that kind of concerned me going into it. But it was great. Like you said, Maui's beautiful. I felt really good on the bike. I hadn't been riding my mountain bike, and I was kind of worried about the technical aspect. There's spots like where I crashed, there's lettuce-sized lava rocks, and everything's loose shale. But I felt really, really good on, another credit to my mountain bike. I felt really good on the bike, got on the run, and I got to about mile 5 or 6 of the run. I think it was a 7 mile run. The last section is downhill, and you hit the beach, and I completely fell apart.
Oh, really?
It was, in my mind at that time, 7 miles had now not become that big of a run.
Yeah.
But the intensity, and I don't know what it was. It still is kind of one of those things that I've never been in that situation before, where I didn't know if it was electrolytes or fuel, and I took plenty of fuel on the bike, but maybe not enough on the run. And I think Ironman training, or at least the running I was doing, I can't take those surges. And I think with the hills and stuff, I just fell apart basically in the last stretches along the beach with some lava rocks. And I kept falling on the lava rocks. I just couldn't control my legs.
Oh, wow.
And there's some sand between the lava rocks. So I was kind of crawling, getting up and running, and then I'd fall again on the rocks and kind of out of it until someone standing by, there's the finish chute's pretty close, and they're like, "You can just walk to the finish." And just hearing that in my head, it clicked. I'm like, "I'm not walking." It kind of got me fired up. So the next thing I know, I was running fine through the finishing chute, and the last thing I remember is I saw Julie Divins, And I just remember thinking in my head, I'm like, hey, there's Julie Dibbins. And next thing I know, I was in a wheelchair with the wet towels on me.
Oh, man.
And I got my first IV, and I was in the med tent. And
oh, wow.
That was the end. It's amazing. I mean, 3 hours can be just as brutal or harder than a, you know, 10-hour race. So I definitely have a lot of respect for it, and it's something that's really uncomfortable for me to race. And I don't know if it's a training or what, but to me, a 2-hour race is pretty scary.
Yeah. So was it dehydration, or was it, because, you know, the difference obviously between, you know, a 2 and 3 hour race and an Ironman, where it's going, you know, in your case, 9 or 10 hours, is, you know, you're just burning glycogen. Mm-hmm. You're not even burning much fat
right
now. So
yeah,
you really have to replace the glycogen.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I talked to Anthony at Vitargo afterwards, and I mean, he's got a PhD, he knows the stuff inside and out. And one of the things that he brought up was when I had my IV, I don't know, I guess there's different kind for electrolytes and sugar. I was in the tent, and I was going on my second bag and still kind of out of it. And someone gave me a Sunkist candy. I put that in my mouth, and I was right back into it.
Yeah.
So I think it was just sugar. And I think racing at that intensity, I probably burned through all my glycogen pretty quick without touching fat, because I was not used to operating in that zone. So
yeah,
that may have been what it was.
Yeah, it's totally a different type of training.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, on the run, I thought I only have a couple miles to go. You know, I didn't stop at the aid stations when I probably should have. So I think that it's a good learning lesson for sure.
So tell me about your triathlon training. Do you put your own training together? You got a coach? How does that work?
Yeah, I have a coach, Gordo Byrne, with Endurance Corner.
Okay.
And I mean, I feel pretty lucky because it's, you know, he's put together a coaching team where we have a forum, and there's like 9 different coaches on there, and it's everything from Alan Cousins, who's really technical, to guys with a lot of experience kind of doing it, like Chucky V, and we can get advice from all them. And I tend to not follow a schedule. I never really have. And I have a hard time trying to stick to a schedule, so I kind of just go out and do whatever I feel like doing for the day, or whatever I can fit in around work.
Right.
And I think, you know, in some ways it may make it more challenging for Gordo, because he's kind of got to adjust things for me a lot. But I think it's the flexibility and not really following a schedule and just having targets kind of to shoot for, it makes it fun for me. I mean, I never feel like it's work. You know, today it stopped raining. I was excited to go ride my bike, and it's not on a schedule. I just was excited to go ride. Then I forgot my skewer to my front wheel at home, so I couldn't ride anyways. But,
bummer.
Yeah, so I mean, my training is just, you know, I think my goal is just to try to stay balanced between swimming, biking, and running. Try not to neglect one of them. And then, you know, just shoot for targets. I mean, for me, running's, I don't really feel like a runner. I have a long way to go with my running. It's somewhat new to me. So running, I just try to stay frequent as possible. And my average run's probably 30 minutes. Same thing with swimming. It's just, I think frequency is a huge help for swimming. And then biking, I like to ride. So that's probably the one thing where I have to put a cap on how much I ride sometimes.
Yeah, we all tend to kind of favor one of the three disciplines. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's kind of what I shoot for. And then, you know, I think I like to, when I have a break in work, I like to have a little camp where I'll just have like a Friday and a weekend, and either go somewhere and train with friends, or really make 3 or 4 big days and then take a rest. And that's where Gordo will work a lot to do what's smart instead of just going somewhere and smashing myself. Like I used to think that was the goal. One of the other coaches on Endurance Corner, Justin, always talks about the success of a camp is not what you do at the camp. It's really the 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the camp. That's when you see if the camp was successful, if you're back to your normal training schedule and you got some kind of a boost from the camp. So I think that's where a coach comes in to help a lot, because, you know, I think most people that are pretty motivated to train can tend to overdo it, thinking that either get caught up in fun and just doing too much over a weekend, or thinking that more is always better when it's not. So
yeah, we've got, you know, Gordo Byrne, for those of you that don't know that name, he's a legend in the sport, been around a long time, co-author of the Triathlete's Training Bible.
Mm-hmm.
and Going Long. I've got both of those books. We talked about that on our Christmas show, some stuff you can buy. Those were good books. And Chucky V, I hadn't heard anything about him for a long time. You know, Chucky V was really far out, wacky dude, but an amazing triathlete. I don't know what his best finish was at Kona, or even how many times he raced there, but they did a spotlight one year on him. I think it might have been in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But he used to sport the big mohawk and this big spike thing, but kind of a crazy dude, lived in his car and just a fanatic. So it's until you mentioned that name, I hadn't heard, you know, what he was up to, so it's good to know he's still around.
Yeah, he's busy coaching. I mean, I met him at one of the camps this year, but he's a really, really smart guy. He's got a lot of interesting things, and I know he's busy coaching and stuff, so
yeah. But so okay, so tell us about your training. You know, what's an average week? You know, it sounds like it's hard for you to get into a definite schedule. Uh-huh. with your work and so on, but what's a typical race phase week look like for you in terms of swimming, biking, running, and any other stuff that you do?
I would say, like, mileage-wise or time or...
Yeah, I mean, do you structure it so that, you know, I typically do this on Monday or this on Tuesday, or is it not even that structured?
Yeah, I am not structured at all.
No.
I'm on this attack point, like, with art, and it's basically a log of 7 days rotating. So I just... That's always rotating. Like, if it's Monday, it's the 7 days. So I just look at a 7 day average and think, you know, I want to try to run 5 days within that 7 days.
Mm.
So things kind of move from right to left off the screen. If I see my runs going away, I know I have to run, you know, coming up. That kind of has to have more of a focus. If I haven't swam in a couple, you know, 4 days, and I'll swim. And then within that 7 day period, I kind of know when I've overdone it, which I think is pretty key on some of those days. I mean, or some of those weeks. And I think that's this year, kind of, you know, experimenting with volume and stuff. I didn't know what was average or normal for training, so I kind of just did a lot until I got tired. And sometimes it was helpful, sometimes it wasn't. But now I kind of know where I should, if that 7 days starts to grow to 20 something hours, and it's pretty balanced between sports. I know I can sustain that for a while, but, as it gets close to a race, I think that I look less at time and just look at the quality of sessions. Like, I still want to be running five times, but the hours don't really matter. I want to have two key run sessions. Where, you know, one's going to be race simulation, it's going to be a longer run, and then I'll probably do something where I'm doing hill work or something like that. But even that, I don't really do, like, 2x10 minutes or that kind of stuff.
Mm.
I think that's part of, you know, I still ride mountain bike year round, so if I'm riding and there's a hill, that's my 5 minute climb, and kind of use that as my training. So
yeah, interesting. But in most of it's low heart rate stuff, you're not
I don't race with the heart rate. I wear it on the bike sometimes, and early season, like last year, I wore it running. I didn't let my heart rate get over like 155, which is pretty hard at first, but now I kind of know what that effort feels like, and like as Gordo defines, like, that steady pace, I'd say 90% of my training is just at that steady pace.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, you know, my breathing changes, I'm working, but I'm definitely not getting like a burn in my legs or, it's not something I couldn't sustain for a couple hours. So that's kind of the zone I operate in most of the time, which worked well for Ironman and especially Ultraman, but again, for Xterra, it was a whole new level of pain.
Yeah, yeah, so, totally different thing. Yeah, well, there's so many different training philosophies out there, you know, because kind of what you're describing is similar to what Mark Allen Online does, and of course, you know, Art is a huge advocate. Yeah. He's on the team for Mark Allen Online. And so it sounds like the philosophies are similar.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as much as it's my training isn't planned, as I get close, like you said, key areas, I'd say 4 to 6 weeks out from a race, I definitely will start using the weekends to simulate the race as much as possible. I think doing a big swim, I swim with Nova Aquatics, like Art, doing a hard swim before a long ride on the weekend is pretty key.
Yeah.
And then running off the bike, you know, not very long, but just starting to run off the bike more often. And you know, the closer it gets to race, the more I want to simulate that race and make sure that those key days are key. And then the other days, if I'm just running, I'm not going to worry about anything else. Just go as easy as possible to make that key day as race specific as possible. So I definitely get more structured that way, but not so much in the planning, just while I'm actually training. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Cause those of us that are like totally anal retentive, you know, I mean, I can tell you what I'm doing on any given day, and the distance and effort and everything. So tell us, I want to know, I did Kona last year, is my first time qualifying. I had a good race at Honu in June last year. Oz was with me and nice. Captured a lot of it on film. That was fun having.
I've heard that's hard.
Having him there, that's a hard race, and it was really hot. Yeah. But yeah, so that's where I qualified. But so tell us about your Kona experience.
Yeah, it was really a really good experience. I didn't. You know, I qualified at St. George, and Gordon and I kind of talked about it. I didn't expect to qualify
where
there.
You took St. George was May 1st, and you took third in your group, age group.
Yeah.
How many slots did they have for you in your age group?
I think six.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I qualified, and I had no plans after that. And I signed up for Kona, and kind of had a talk with Gordo whether I was going to really focus on spending the rest of the summer, you know, focus on Kona and trying to do well there, or just kind of have a fun summer and keep doing adventure races and whatever I wanted to over the summer. And I mean, that's what I did, and I'm really glad I did, because, you know, I went to Kona just to take it all in. And I mean, is, you know, that the whole village there and everything is just a really cool experience. I mean, I heard people talking about it the whole year and going there and trying to imagine what it would be like. But, you know, I think it hit me riding the course a day or two before. Monique and I drove out on the Queen K, and I rode part of where Javi was. I had no idea what the winds were like there. And just riding back, and you know, I for some reason thought it was just going to be a flat course and just easy. And I realized that day the course, it's a world championship race for a reason. I mean, everything about that course is hard. And then you have people from all over the world. You know, everyone says that when you walk around, everyone's fit. And but I think it's just the like-mindedness of everyone there. And being there, I mean, I remember the swim start, just that surreal feeling.
It is,
you know,
huh?
It's pretty special. So it's, yeah, I'm glad that I had no expectations of the race or what to do there. And I was able to look around quite a bit on the run and the bike and kind of take in the views. And I had a good race, better than expected. I had done an adventure race, I think, 4 weeks before that, or 6 weeks, the end of August, and really buried myself. I think the sleep deprivation and that race just kind of put me behind, and I didn't really get to train like I wanted to going into Kona, which now that I look back is probably a good thing. I kind of just rested going into it. It confirmed a lot of things to me. I mean, I hadn't ridden over 100 miles in a while. I hadn't done any long runs, but I think I just, that race kind of changed for me because I still ended up having a really good run, a really good race all around, and I didn't have to prove to myself in training that I still had the fitness, which I think was pretty key for me going into Ultraman, because I kind of just thought, well, if it worked in Kona, I'm definitely not going to be able to do the training I thought I'd need for Ultraman, but it turns out that there's no way to train for a 52-mile run and run that far. So
yeah.
I think you just have to trust at some point, and Kona was like that for me. I mean, it was as far as my race, being there was really cool. As far as my race, just finishing it kind of confirmed a lot of things for me to just start trusting more instead of trying to do it in training and prove it. So
do you remember your splits at Kona?
I swam under an hour. I think it was 59 minutes. And it was brutal. I mean, I'm not the best swimmer, but most races I can kind of get out in the front, or I usually start on the side. All the other races I've always started on the side and worked my way over, and just to get clean water. And at Kona, there's no real starting on the side.
And there was no clear water either, because there's a whole bunch of people going about an hour. Yeah.
So I remember we started, it felt like we were going way too fast, and I couldn't slow down. There's people climbing over me. As you know, it's just brutal. And probably 25 minutes into the swim, I got hit in the face a few times, kicked, and I looked up, and I thought, I got to find clear water. And I looked up ahead of me, and 300 yards ahead of me, behind me, left and right, just white water everywhere.
Yep.
And I realized there's no getting away from it. And at the time, I mean, effort-wise, I really thought in my head, I must be swimming in the 50s, like low 50s, because I'm working so hard. And I thought, you know, I'm probably going harder than I should, but this is racing, and I'm probably going to have a fast swim because the effort just felt so hard. And then I got out and saw 59, and I thought I swam a lot harder than that. So I just thought, well, it's going to be a long day. And the bike, I think I did just over 5 hours.
Oh, awesome.
And then 3:16 for the run. So it was a good day.
Man, that's an awesome day. An awesome day. So you think you finished 28th, 29th, something like that in your age group?
Yeah. Yeah, 9:27 was my overall time. So.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. And then how long after that did you do Ultraman?
It was Kona. 2 weeks after that was Xterra, and then 4 weeks after that was Ultraman.
Oh, okay.
So that was the order.
And how did you do at Ultraman?
I ended up getting third overall out of the 3-day event. So I was 2 minutes behind Jonas Colting and probably about 20 minutes or more behind Mike LaRue, who won overall.
Wow.
So.
That's amazing for that long of a race to be that close. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was.
Did you know that you were that close to the second place guy?
Yeah, because each day there's a cumulative time, and on the run I actually finished like 20-30 minutes before him, but overall he had crossed the line to overall come in 2 minutes ahead of me. So they were counting on the time, but I mean he. Jonas is, he's won Ultraman a couple times, and you know, Jonas Colting is a champion, so he had some health issues on the run, and he walked a lot of the run, so, I mean, I'm sure if he needed to make up more than 2 minutes, he would have, but, yeah, that was an exciting race.
That's amazing. So how long did that take you?
I think my overall time was about 22 hours.
So, 22 hours.
Long race, about 8-hour days. And, you know, it's weird, something that long, it almost, you'd think it would get boring, but it went by so fast. I mean, every day. It was really around the clock. I think it hit us after we picked up our race packets and had the briefing, and someone said, you know, this is really like a 3-day round the clock race once you pick up your packets and the starts. Because, you know, as soon as we finish a stage, I'd be pounding Vitargo, trying to get my calories back in, ice bath. It's just weird. I think that you're working so hard in the day that I take an ice bath and eat, and your body's processing all these calories, and I would just heat up. And I remember taking showers at night just because my head and my body was so hot. I had to keep cooling myself down.
Yeah.
Just throughout after every stage. Just there's so much going on, but it's every inch of that race was pretty exciting. I mean, going around the island, the Kona side really is, it's the lava fields and it's hard, and then, you know, we ran through that part, but the other side of the island was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all vegetation and
yeah
very cool. So Ultraman, for those of you that don't know, it's a 6-mile swim,
10K swim, yeah, 6.2 miles.
6.2-mile swim, and then you do, what, 90 miles on the bike the first day?
Yeah, so 90 miles up to Volcano. It's like 7,600 feet of climbing on day one, and then day two is 171.4 miles from basically a south tip to north to Javi, where the Ironman course bike turnaround is.
Okay.
And then day three starts in Javi, and you run down the Queen K, where the bike turnaround is, to basically the bike route on the Ironman back to the airport for the finish.
Yeah.
52.4 miles.
I don't know. I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine. Why not a triple Ultraman? You know, let's do 4 Ironmans back to back. And, you know, I mean, it's insane. It's just crazy.
I was almost thinking that at the start of the run. I thought, you know, I like this stage race thing, and I almost thought it'd be nice to do 4 or 5 days, but then I'm glad they had that double marathon the last day, because after that, it was pretty obvious there was nothing going on day 4.
Yeah.
Anything we had left was gone.
Yeah, I can imagine. Amazing. Well, Fletcher, I keep wanting to call you Fletcher because I know several people named Fletcher, but that's your last name. Slater, I appreciate your time. It's just great meeting you.
Definitely.
And you know, someday when you've got an extremely easy ride scheduled, give me a call, because I'll go with you, and that'll be my hammer ride for the week. But it's just incredible, your success in the sport and so on. I hope you know, continued success, and
thank you.
Hopefully the whole band of us will qualify for Kona, and
yeah,
we'll all
that'd
meet
be great
there, again in October.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Stay a little longer after this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'd like to do some scuba diving. I didn't get to dive at all this last time. So
nice.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, nice. So tune in, triathica.com, and you can reach me at ron@triathica.com or info@triathica.com. Call us, email us. We'd love to hear your feedback. And once again, Slater Fletcher, amazing triathlete. Lots of success this year. Thanks.
Thanks.